This party is going to be off the hook.
Everybody, welcome to a very special edition of this is a very, very special edition of the Friday Filibuster. First off, it is our annual award night. I know Mac McIntyre, did you bust out the tuxedo again?
I do, yeah.
What are you sporting? The blue sequined one? Is that what we're
doing? That's right, yeah. The pale blue with the ruffles. Yeah,
that's right, straight from high school prom. Nice. And Erica, what have you brought to the award gala?
I'm wearing an Armani sweatpant.
Excellent. Very good. All right. And shirtless again, right?
And, what am I not?
That's right. And a very special guest, Alice Nelson, who's a first-time guest. And I think we were just saying she's broken through the glass ceiling on the filibuster.
I have. I should be commemorated on a stamp or something.
Yeah, we'll get that churned out right away.
Just in time for the post office to actually.
There you go.
The Friday filibuster stamp collection probably isn't something you'd love to be a part of. It's going to be like Willow and Pat Roach will be on there. You know, Mario Lopez, you know, so you don't have to worry about it. Nothing you really want to be part of. Ben 10, Alien Force picture. So,
there you go.
But anyway, Alice, it's great to have you on board. It's the second very special aspect of this is that it's the 1,000th Verdict podcast, right, Eric? 1,000th?
That's what Michael said, unless he got his math wrong, which is possible.
That's
since
true.
He's not here to defend himself. So.
Yeah. So yeah, so it's 1,000. So it's really like it's really very much the Mayan 2012 calendar. Everything's coming to a head. So. I think this is definitely one of the precursors to the whole world evaporating. But we thought we'd just – let's get right into it. This is just going to be kind of a good time. We've got a whole bunch of random categories. And, Mac, why don't you pick one? Why don't you start us off? We'll get right into it. We typically save our favorite stuff towards the end, but we've got some fun ones to choose from. So, Mac, I'll let you pull the trigger. And I've got a couple of other staffs. They've submitted a couple over email, so we'll offer that to him as well. But Mac, I'm gonna let you kick it off.
All right, sounds good. These are the Buster Awards, named in honor of one Buster Bluth.
That's right.
And we're looking back at the awesomeness that was the year 2011, or perhaps some of the less notable aspects of the year in entertainment.
That's true.
I'll just start at the bottom of the list and work our way up. First off, is something more of a negative, but we can have some fun with it. We talk a lot about action movies. What is the most disappointing action scene of the year?
So we're going to start on a downer. And actually, Mac, I'm going to make you the master of ceremonies. Okay.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Okay. The master of ceremonies.
So that's what the MC in McIntyre stands for.
That's correct.
He's the only one with the blue suit. He should be the MC.
That's true.
All right. So
I might be like Eddie Murphy and quit.
All right. So most disappointing action scene, correct? That's the one
we're
going to start with. So, Eric, why don't you go first? What was your nomination and, you know, therefore winner in your mind? Everyone's a winner on the filibuster.
It's an honor to be nominated.
It is.
For the worst of anything.
Most disappointing action scene, as far as you're concerned.
All right, well, this is going to take it in context of the movie itself. I like the movie a lot. I'm going for Captain America.
Okay.
They kind of have this great buildup, and then all of a sudden they kind of do a lot in this very short montage sequence. And I found that, and that's my, it's the montage sequence from Captain America, just because they kind of gloss over a lot of what looks like really cool stuff that I would like to see them actually do.
Now, is this the one where they team up and they just start?
Yeah, it's like the Howling Commandos, and they just kind of go to town in a lot of just very quick stuff that happens, and then all of a sudden they moved on to the end of the campaign. And I know it's not going to be a 6-hour movie, but, you know, I would have liked maybe a little more.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay, I could buy that. I think I'm with you on that, because there was definitely some build-up to that, and you know, just at least maybe one action, like one contiguous action scene with them just taking care of business. So
most of those montage scenes, they don't work very well. I thought in X-Men 2, the montage scene was pretty lame.
That's great. The first, you talk about X-Men First Class.
Yes.
I totally agree with you. In fact, to me, I thought the movie was just like top shelf right up to that point. I thought the montage like destroyed the momentum, and it became really formulaic. I mean, there was a great action scene where the brother, it wasn't the Brotherhood, it was the Hellfire Club. Right. They attacked, you know, the Academy. I thought that was thrilling. I thought all this stuff with Magneto hunting down Nazis, cool. Montage hits, and then it just gets kind of bland.
Yeah, that it sounds similar to Captain America then, because they just really kind of went into way more detail in the origin story than most movies do. And I give them a lot of credit for kind of going to the character, but then as soon as they get to the action stuff, it's just like they want to cram as much as possible. So
yeah.
All right. Well,
I'm depressed already.
That's good. So, Alice, how about you? What do you got? Most disappointing action scene.
Well, we watched this movie earlier this year called Blitz with Jason Statham. I really like Jason Statham. I can watch him in anything. But I would have to say the whole movie, every action scene was a dud. It was just him sort of walking through each scene. He never really beat anybody up, never broke any chairs, and it was a lot of talking. And I thought, that's not an interesting Jason Statham movie, so I'm just going to say every scene in the movie Blitz.
You know, I've heard of it, and I could kind of picture it. What is it about? What's the movie about?
It's now I have to remember what the movie's about.
All right, I don't even want you to burn your brain out thinking.
I'm burning my brain cells.
Do they sell it as an action movie? How about that? Was it?
Yeah, they do. They sell it as an action movie, and what I saw it on another movie, the trailer, and it looked great. And I thought, oh, this is going to be an awesome Jason Statham movie. Then I turn it on, and there's little to no action, and even it seemed like some of the action in the trailer wasn't even in the movie. It was just a complete bore all the way through.
Oh man! All right, Beth. You know, those are the worst. I seem to get suckered by that all the time. I get these movies that are packages action films, you know?
Yeah.
And they're obviously not. So.
Exactly. Well, this is one of them.
All right. Every scene in Blitz, very good. So, translation, don't watch Blitz. Mac, how about you? Mr. Disappointing action scene. You're Buster Nom.
I don't know if this is going to be controversial or not, but this movie that was really disappointed me. I wasn't expecting a lot. I kind of knew going in that it was going to be disappointing, but even then I was let down. I'm going to go with the ending of Transformers 3.
Oh, yes. Awful.
All right. We might have a first bit of controversy here.
But that's what I thought, because I know you're something of a fan, Dave.
Of Transformers in general, a lot of issues with the third movie, but I got to say, I had a good time. But you go ahead, make your case. Go ahead.
All right, well, for one thing, on those brief moments when we actually do see the Transformers in action, it's so, like, blurry and herky-jerky, you can't tell what you're looking at. And you can't tell which Transformers which and who's fighting who. And another part of the problem is that we never really get to know them. We all know Optimus, but the other Autobots are, like, sort of non-players in their own movie. They all have funny accents, but that's really the only character development that they get. And it keeps cutting back to the guy, what's his name, Sam, and the girl who doesn't wear any pants.
Sure.
It keeps following the two of them.
And runs around in high heels that I like.
Yeah, it runs around high heels and no pants. And it keeps following them around when I kept wanting to go back to the Transformers fighting. But you would get like 2 seconds of Transformers fighting and then like, you know, 5 minutes of Sam and the girl with no pants. Then, you know, like another second of Transformers and then another 15 minutes of Sam and the girl with no pants and so on. And then the big final confrontation between Optimus and Megatron that the whole movie was building up to was over in like a second. So
yeah.
So okay, very good. You know, and my small counter to that is, and you're right on all that. I can't say that's wrong at all. Like, there's an excruciating moment when what's her face like, you know, talks trash to Megatron and gets him to go. That was terrible. Oh.
Yes.
I mean, it was unbelievably terrible. It's like Michael Bay just does this. Like, he can shoot action so well, but then he just completely kicks you in the nuggets with these terrible decisions. So I'm totally with you on that. But what I liked about that final battle, Mac, was just, like, essentially Optimus Prime performed the Sub-Zero spinal rip on Megatron.
That's true.
And then he put two bullets in the back of the head of the other guy, you know, of Sentinel Prime. So I guess my loyalty lies with Optimus Prime, would that mean maybe Peter Cullen? That's where my loyalty lies, because he was like the defining voice of my youth, you know, as Optimus. So maybe that's
so what. Now, Dave, do you have some sort of like nostalgia effect on with the Transformers
movies? I absolutely do. So, like, you know, some people might have G.I. Joe. I mean, I was a Transformers guy. Transformers and He-Man, although the He-Man big 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 screen feature wasn't as, you know, successful, say, even though I sort of have a soft spot for that as well. But yeah, Transformers is my show, and so I definitely had a soft spot. So try as Michael Bay, he tried very hard to just take a dump all over it, but I, you know, my nostalgia managed to power through a little bit. So
there you go.
So that's all I got. All right. So my most disappointing action scene was the entire final fight of Ong Bak 3.
Oh.
we've talked about Ong Bak before, but Ong Bak, you know, Tony Joss hit the scene with the first Ong Bak. Great, simple, fantastic movie, stunt-driven, amazing. Ong Bak 2 and Ong Bak 3, all of a sudden, like, time-traveled backwards, and now there was a period piece, and everything became, like, mystical. And Ong Bak 3 just was, just again, just slow and plotting, confusing, you know, just very mystical and totally lost sight of why the first one was great. But the real kicker came at the end where our hero gets to, like, the final fight scene, and then you just see amazing shots and amazing fights. But it ends with everybody dying somehow. And zooms out, and he was envisioning it the whole time. It was like a dream. And it showed him that violence was not the answer, and then they worked out their issues some other way. So, I don't know. It was extraordinarily disappointing. Just really kind of, I mean, Tony Jaa, again, someone who could do no wrong, but that guy is really kind of falling off the cliff. So that is unfortunate. So, all right. So you got a positive one to throw in, Mac? Well, yeah, give us something positive now. Next category.
Okay, positive. Well, we're going to jump around then a little bit.
Yes. Oh, wait a minute. Actually, before I forget.
Okay. I mean, oh, yes. Read our...
Yes. So, Mr. William Lee's most disappointing action scene was something called Saint, a Dutch holiday horror movie about the true story of Saint Nicholas. Okay, quote, "Turns out Saint Nick was a murderous bishop from medieval times, and his ghost returns every 42 years to commit a mass killing spree in Amsterdam. After seeing Nick take out the little kids at an orphanage and his henchmen massacre a family of various kids, we're waiting to see this bastard roasted on an open fire." Instead, the movie climax consists of the protagonist cowering under an overturned boat until Nick rides away into the fog after his ship is set on fire. That is a very disappointing.
And yet, I really want to see it.
I know, right?
Yeah, I know. That is pretty funny. And that was the only one sent for that
okay.
One. So. All right. Go ahead, Mac. That sounds pretty great.
All right. Well, we're talking about action, so let's go on with something a little more satisfying, you know, a little more something, you know, something we can sink our teeth into. And that is our favorite villain death.
All right. We really love villain deaths around here. So best villain death. Eric, back to you.
All right. I'm going to be intentionally vague, because I'm sure a lot of people have not seen this show or this season, but I'm going to go with a particular death in season 4 of Breaking Bad. And I'm not going to say what it is or who it is, other than there is a thing that happens in that season that I think I've never seen on TV, will probably never see again, and will always remember for the rest of my life.
In a good way or in a bad way?
In a great way. It's amazing. But yeah, so that, I'm going to leave it that simple, clean.
All right.
That's it.
So do you have cable? Did you watch season 4 on cable?
I ended up buying it because I didn't have cable. So
I can't wait to see season 4.
Yeah.
All right. Good. Alice, what do you have?
Okay. I reviewed this movie called The Hunters, and it's a French film by a French director. And there was a scene where there's these hunters that are in this nature reserve, and they lure people in there to hunt the people and kill them. And in one scene, this police officer is trying to find out why these 22 people in this one town have disappeared and nobody seems to care. So he is in this sort of ravine, and two of the hunters are up above him, and he shoots one of them, and that hunter turns and shoots his cohort across the way, and they both fall to their death at the ravine below. And I thought that was a cool villain death scene. You got two villains in one shot.
That's not bad. And you can always, I'm always a fan of the falling off of a high place, you know. Yeah. Those are good ones, you know. I mean,
nice.
Yeah, those are always nice. Probably, you know, I mean, you know, Hans Gruber taking his swan dive off of Nakatomi Building is probably the best. Yeah. You know?
That is awesome.
So, but that's a pretty good one. All right, Mac, how about you?
I actually had a really hard time coming up with one for this.
You know, me too.
Yeah, this was usually you'd think there'd be a lot, but there wasn't a whole lot of standout villain deaths this year. So I am going to go with the ending from the movie Hannah.
Oh, yeah.
Right. The 80-pound female assassin, right?
Exactly, yes. Teenage girl Jack Bauer.
That's right, teenage Jack
in the past, Bauer. In the past on the Buffbusters, we've had a category of WTF movie of the year. And if we had done that this year, Hannah would be the number one spot.
I don't know. Maybe Saint might have taken over.
Yeah, well, you
have to. Sorry, Mac.
This movie, Hannah, is just crazy. It's just nuts, but in a good way. It entertains. And the final villain death is pretty sweet. I don't know if I should spoil it or not.
Go ahead.
All right. So Hannah is disarmed. She's injured. She's being chased by the villain, but she manages to rig this little sort of miniature bow and arrow type thing. She does a little MacGyver thing where she makes her little bow and arrow and surprises the villain at the end by unleashing the arrow on her and then pulls out the gun and takes her out in the – and she strikes the exact same pose that she strikes at the very beginning of the movie.
Synergy right there.
Exactly. Yeah.
Great. Nice. William's suggestion is an X-Men First Class. And I'd probably agree with this. This is probably the lone – well, one of the few bright spots after that montage, that crippling montage. But, Sebastian Shaw is paralyzed, and Magneto delivers a slow and poetically fitting death using the Nazi coin that he couldn't move at the beginning of the movie. A thoroughly satisfying kill. And I agree with that. That was pretty cool. And again, Michael Fassbender is that guy's about to explode, I think. He's done a lot of stuff, so.
He was great in that. He was. That's part of the movie.
I agree. I would agree with that, for sure. For me, I had same trouble. I mean, with the breadth of action crap that comes by, or even, forget even action stuff, like Gatoroid and Sharktopus, there should have been some kind of nothing attacked me, so I had to go back to, it's a Blu-ray release this year, but it was of a movie from 1980, The Exterminator, starring Robert Ginty of War of the Lost World fame.
Nice.
We've talked about this a bit, I think, but it's a crazy movie. It's like those early 80s movies, the vigilante movies are great because they're always Vietnam veterans because it was in the early 80s, you know? So there's always Vietnam veterans. They're always super pissed. And this guy, he was really pissed. His Vietnam vet buddy got killed by some street punks, so he essentially goes on a crusade to eradicate crime, but instead of it being like, you know, the Batman stringing people up for the cops to get him down, or Spider-Man throwing me in a web and laughing at him, this guy just viciously murders people, you know, by like shooting him in the groin and just, you know, shotguns to the face. But this one villain, and as far as I could tell, like his worst crime may have been just kind of cheating people out of their paychecks in a meatpacking plant. I don't know if he actually killed anyone. I think he was just flinty. But Robert Ginty, he suspended this guy over a meat grinder and lowers him in feet first. And then they shoot to the, to the output, so to speak. And here's all this ground chuck flowing out. And they're like, man, that's harsh. That's just a harsh punishment. So yeah, he was an anti-hero.
Was the character's name Charles? Because that would have been
great. Unfortunately, I don't think that ever. I don't think anyone was clever enough to. Though he wasn't the kind of vigilante who would spout off, you know, clever one-liners. And it's Robert Ginty, so he wouldn't understand him anyway.
I was going to say, remembering Lord of the War of the Lost World, probably, yeah. There's kind of the bane of 80s action movie heroes, right?
Nice. All right, so, okay, Mac, next category.
All right, next category. This is where we show off our sensitive sides.
Yes.
With the movie that made you gently weep, no matter how tough you may appear on the outside.
Right, we've already established, Alice, that you are tough. You live in Idaho and you raise livestock. So.
Exactly. We don't cry here either.
That's right. No, we're not pandering. So, Eric, what do you got?
All right. Well, I found movie to be a little limiting, so I went with a TV show.
Sure.
Because, you know, we're loose. We're all over. We can do whatever we want.
Yeah, loosey-goosey.
Anyway, so I'm going with Sons of Anarchy Season 3, Episode 11, Vanya. I'm not gonna spoil the actual scene, but there is a scene in that episode that makes me cry just thinking about it.
And Dave, I know which one you're talking.
I think you know exactly where Jax has to make a very difficult decision, and it is just from the music to the way it's shot. It's just absolutely brutal. And
there's some upsetting imagery in that episode as well, like some really intense.
Oh yeah, that's true.
You're already emotionally kind of tenuous emotional ground as it is, but yeah,
even I can just hear that song and I tear up. It's pretty.
That is an excellent.
In a season that had its ups and downs, I think that is definitely one of the highlights. So.
Yep,
that was the best season finale I think I've ever seen.
The finale was pretty.
Yeah, it was so awesome.
And the final scene to me is one of the best, like just scenes shot.
Yeah,
or shot
yeah.
the final shot.
Another good song use there as well.
Good song use too. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
So and I don't know. I haven't seen this current season, so I don't know. I've been the DVD guy, just catching up on them. So, but
yeah,
that was fantastic. All right, Alice, what about you?
Okay, you said we could be loosey goosey.
Do it.
And so I really don't cry much. Not too many things on TV or movies make me cry, but there is one scene. I know I heard Michael Staley, who hates this movie, but I love it. It's a Wonderful Life. My all time favorite holiday movie.
Yeah, I think Michael might have the an opinion not shared by a ton of people. But.
I know. It makes me angry. I yelled at my iPod when he said that. But at the end of the movie, every time Harry Bailey says to my big brother George, the richest man in town.
That's a tough one.
I just blubber like a big baby.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. That's
yeah. That's mine.
Now, did they do a release of It's a Wonderful Life? I mean, did they do a Blu-ray or any kind of special release for that movie?
Yeah, there was a Blu-ray this year.
There was, okay.
Yeah, I forget who wrote it, but it was I edited the review. So
nice.
Yeah, I think Patrick Bromley.
Patrick Bromley,
yeah.
I love that movie.
All right. Mac, what's yours?
All right. I also went to TV for mine.
Okay.
Which was just an amazing season finale, just one of the big TV events of the year for those of us who are in the know. And that's the this year's season 3 finale of Castle.
That's right. Yes. Major major things happening, right?
Yes, huge things happening. We saw that one major character got shot defending another, and that was really just hugely dramatic scene, which again, like what you were describing here, just like the way it was staged and the music and everything was just, all set up for maximum heartbreakingness. And if that wasn't enough, then the very next scene, another major character gets shot. And as that happens, a second character makes this huge confession and then boom, goes to black. And, just one gut punch after another. And, boy, it was a long summer waiting to see what was going to happen next. So.
Has it fulfilled the cliffhangers out of curiosity without getting specific and spoilery?
I'd say so, yeah. All summer long, the fans were trying to find out what the twist was going to be. Oh, what's the twist? Maybe this really happened. Maybe that really happened. But turns out there wasn't actually a twist. The twist was there was no twist, The character who died. The character who was shot got shot. And it was dealing with the fallout of those two events. And the way as the season's gone on, it's complicated their lives somewhat more, so.
All right. Okay, not a whole bunch. I think the people, these guys they wanted to preserve their macho side, so I didn't get so I got a couple here. Let's see. All I got from Adam Arsenal was The Muppets. That's all I got. So. It must have been from reel to reel. He was just bawling. Let's see. Now this is from William, and this is a movie I haven't seen, and I need to see it apparently. But for him, it was in the movie Drive, and he said, "I love the dreamy." Well, he used the word dreamy. That is his word, William. That is his word. I love the dreamy extended kiss Ryan Gosling gives Carey Mulligan in the elevator. Well, I guess there's just before big spoiler, because that's when you know he really cares for her. So I won't put that. So
I've been hearing nothing but good things about that.
I know.
Yeah.
He says it's pretty awesome. And then for me, this was the easiest one, actually. In fact, the hardest decision was whether to give this give this movie two Busters. But for now, it was Warrior, the Tom Hardy movie.
Oh yeah. The MMA.
MMA thing. And again, I don't think anyone's reviewed as many MMA tap out movies as I have. They've all been just terrible. you know, terrible lugs, boots to the face, garbage. But this, this was amazing. Just an amazing movie. And as far as a movie that is perfectly set up to really, you know, again, you know, and Alice, I'm not trying to, you know, push you out of this at all. But it's one of those. I mean, it's talking about brothers and the relationship to the father. You know, so it's kind of tuned towards just getting, you know, just tweaking that emotional funny bone or that emotional nerve in probably a lot of guys who might relate to that. You know, not that I have any brother or father issues, thankfully, but I could, you know, there's so many thematic things going on there that it was just. You know, just amazing how they did it. And essentially, this family, you know, their therapy is just, you know, beating the hell out of each other in, you know, in this octagon. But it's done in an amazing way. And then there's a last, you know, it's not a surprise, but the last battle, the championship bout is between the two brothers. They end up facing each other. So it's really intense. And it's like one of those things where like all their issues kind of come to a head. And I won't get into the ending, but even again, it's one of those things just thinking about it. It's got great music set to it. Everything is happening, you know, everything that's been building up, and it's got a great final scene. So it probably eclipses that, hey dad, want to have a catch scene in Field of Dreams?
hey now, don't dog Field of Dreams.
Hey, no, to me that was like the guy chick flick moment, you know?
yeah, totally.
So, Warrior, so just really strong stuff. And it's not corny or contrived either. Like, everything's earned, so that's why, it resonates as much. So, yeah, definitely weep worthy. Okay, so, Mac, get us out of this oversensitivity. Rescue us from this sentimentality.
Okay. Let's see here. Well, I guess, what's next? All right, well, so now we can, you know, be tough guys again. We can go with we talked about our most disappointing action scene, so now let's talk about our favorite action scene of the year.
Favorite action scene. All right, Eric, what do you got?
All right, I'm going to go with the climactic Golden Gate Bridge battle and Rise of the Planet of the Apes, which is a movie that I liked. I sort of hesitate to watch it again because I'm not sure if I'd be under the same spell. I don't for no reason other than I liked it kind of so much when I watched it, but it may have been kind of right time, right place. But I definitely give a lot, you know, the people who made the movie, the filmmakers, a lot of credit for shooting action in a way that makes a lot of sense, is thrilling, and also kind of, you know, lets you feel a clear sense of progression from one side of the story to the other. And I think that final action sequence really kind of came together in a way that I really enjoyed. And like I said, you could tell what was going on, unlike maybe Mac's problem with Transformers.
True.
You knew exactly what was happening the whole way through, and there are a lot of cool little moments and just really, you know, ape-tastic things. I don't know. It was good.
All right. How does it compare to the other famous Golden Gate Bridge action scene, A View to a Kill? The
blip. What's this now?
A View to a Kill, the James Bond movie, Roger Moore fighting Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken, yeah.
On top of the Golden Gate Bridge and a blimp. Yeah, fantastic.
I imagine it compares favorably.
Yeah, it does compare favorably. Probably, yeah.
I've never seen that movie.
Ah, okay.
Oh, you're missing out.
Okay. You're missing out on some great, terrible rear projection. Roger Moore hanging from a fire truck ladder with a screen in the back of him.
Is it me or is Roger Moore the worst of the James Bonds?
Roger Moore was good in For Your Eyes Only, which I, you know, but all the stuff where it was goofy, it was pretty brutal. You know,
yeah.
He was like 60-something in that one. So he was making out essentially with his granddaughter. So it was
gross.
Yeah, it was rough at the end there for sure. I don't know if I could speak for everyone here, but I've always been a Timothy Dalton guy. So I think we've talked Dalton on the show. So, but anyway.
He only did two, didn't he?
He only did two, unfortunately. Unfortunately for the world, he only did two. But that's neither here nor there. So, so Alice, over to you. What do you, best action scene.
So, for me, this one was kind of tough. But a couple weeks ago, I saw Colombiana. I wasn't interested in seeing it.
Yeah, Zoe Saldana, right?
Yeah, Zoe Saldana. I thought, you know, it would be dumb. But husband wanted to see it, so we rented it. And it was quite a good movie. I was pleasantly surprised. And there's one scene where it's actually not even her. It's the actress who plays her as a little girl. And she witnesses the execution-style murder of her parents. And then the guys that killed her parents want to, of course, kill her because she has something they want. But the action scene that was awesome was she escapes from them, and she sort of runs through this town. And it's hard to describe, but when you're watching it, it's this little girl being chased by these, like, four muscle-bound thugs as they hop over buildings, jump on walls, roll on over, and it's just this whole scene of her escaping through this little town of hers, and it looks like she's going to get caught, and then she does this slide into the sewer, and then that's sort of the end of the scene where she escapes. But the whole thing is maybe 10 minutes long, and it is just kind of intense because you don't know what's going to happen, and just watching this little girl escape from these big guys I thought was kind of exciting. There, I said it.
Oh, very nice. Now, so yeah, that kind of flew under the radar, I guess. Is that an action movie straight up, or is that more like a drama, or what would you say?
Straight up action movie. It is. And I liked Angelina Jolie in Salt. I kind of like these little skinny women who can fight and do that kind of stuff. I think that's kind of interesting. And I wasn't sure about this movie, but this was a straight up action movie, and she did a really good job in it.
You know who is a great, again, small digression, but who did a great, as far as a female action hero, Paula Patton in Mission Impossible Ghost Protocol, which we saw a couple of days ago, was just a butt kicker. I mean, you believed it too. Wow, she would break me in twain, you know.
That's what's good about this one too. You believed it. She wasn't using her strength so much as weapons to fight off the guys. So
there you go, nice. Yeah, I've always liked that. I think we've talked about this, but you know, a movie. I remember like Three Ninjas. Remember those movies? Remember the Three Ninjas movies? They're like 7-year-olds just doing these roundhouse kicks on full-grown adult men, you know, and they're getting sent flying. I know it's obviously goofy, but it's like, I mean, come on. All right, Mac, how about you?
All right. Well, for mine, we're going back to Captain America. Not the montage, Eric. But
I'm better not be.
I'm going to go with the scene where Cap rescues his good friend Bucky. Mm-hmm. This is the bit where Cap is on the USO tour. He's in Italy with all the real soldiers. And he's there in his colorful costume. Learns that his best friend's been kidnapped behind enemy lines with a bunch of other guys, and just grabs that clunky metal shield, suits up, and goes after him. One-man army. And that whole sequence from beginning to end is just really thrilling, exciting stuff.
You know, I would say, though, out of that movie, maybe my favorite action scene in that movie may have been just a street chase when he's juiced up, you know?
And he's right after he gets the
juice, man.
That is really exciting.
I thought that was cool. Maybe that's because it was very, you know, it felt very practical too. So yeah.
It's interesting with these superhero origin stories. A lot of times, it's the times when they first use their powers is kind of the most exciting part, as opposed to the big finale at the end.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm.
I think that's not true of all of them, but it's true of a lot of them. Yeah.
All right, so some submissions here from our brethren. Josh Rode at best action scene. Does the final 40 minutes of 13 Assassins count as one action scene? I deeply love that movie, and it was actually an hour. I looked at my watch, I timed it's an hour straight, and yes, it does.
Wow. That's
an excellent suggestion. Adam Arsena, again, confounds us. Best action scene? Sherlock Holmes. That's all I got.
could have sworn he was going to say Muppets again.
see, Tom Becker, bringing in kind of the more interesting, obscure ones. So this is the 10-minute opening motorcycle chase scene in Live Like a Cop, Die Like a Man by Ruggiero Deodato.
Wow.
That was an awesome one, right? Right?
Okay. Yeah.
So, Tom representing the Italian filmmakers here. For William, again, he goes to the drive. Well, the pawn shop robbery and drive. That was the most suspenseful few minutes I spent in the theater last year. I really do need to see that movie, apparently. And for me, my best action scene was the final fight, the final truck fight in Bangkok Knockout, which I think, again, you recall me just, you know, talking about pretty goofy. As a movie goes, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense, but these are essentially, it's just a movie where they just put a bunch of stunt guys and let them beat the living crap out of each other for 90 minutes and put themselves in these lethal predicaments. And this truck fight at the end, you got two guys underneath a moving truck fighting each other.
Wow.
That's underneath?
Yes. They're I mean, the truck's probably rolling along, I would say, like 20 miles an hour or so. So it's this big truck rolling along, and they're both hanging on to the undercarriage of the truck. And they're like, with two arms, they're like kicking each other and, you know, falling and before getting thrown under the tires, grabbing and holding. And it's crazy. It is crazy.
Wow. Wow.
I mean, I didn't give a crap about the characters, but I just cared about the actors' lives, essentially. You know? And it was like that. I mean, I could actually pick an action scene from that movie, and it's just ridiculous. And the end scene, they roll the credits, and they just show like the outtakes of just these guys getting carted away by the paramedics. I mean, it's just brutal.
To the sound as of yakety sax.
You know, I would say it's probably kind of goofy because the very last scene of the movie, everyone's in a hospital bed, and then credits roll, and then everyone starts getting up and dancing for some reason, and it is like this. It's just like this lighthearted music. I couldn't get my finger on the tone of the movie, but I know they risked their lives. crazy. Okay, yeah, Bangkok Knockout. Worth. It's probably on Netflix. Maybe check it out. It's worth checking out just to see that. All right, Mac. What's next?
All right. Next category. Well, now we're in the dregs.
In the dregs. All right.
We're at the bottom here with the. And this is your wording, Dave. The movie that pooped on your soul.
All right. Movie that pooped on your soul, Eric.
I have talked a lot about the Barbie movies on the podcast. They're always an event.
Yes, it's an event show.
They're always a bit of an event. It's an event whenever I get a Barbie movie to review. So this particular year, I got Barbie Princess Charm School, which had the kind of was not only a terrible movie, but Barbie sends terrible messages to kids and girls. And there's a whole kind of subtext in this movie of aristocracy and royal families and stuff that just kind of offends my Yankee sensibilities. So Barbie, Princess Charm School, pooped on my soul.
Unfortunate. Okay, Alice.
I'm sorry, Dave, but Transformers Dark of the Moon.
You don't have to apologize to me. You just have to apologize to yourself, Alice.
It was, you know, by the time it got to the end and the cool robot fighting, I just didn't care anymore. It was Shia LaBeouf was awful.
Look, I can't argue with you. It was half of the movie was excruciating. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was painful. So I call it a laptop movie. I spent most of my time on my laptop.
Yeah, you know, that is like a perfect highlight movie where you kind of spool it up on your Blu-ray and just pound it through your speakers, but you fast forward like literally an hour and a half. You know, you ignore an hour and a half of what came to and just get right into, you know, robots fighting. But again,
I have done that. I might have enjoyed it more.
Yeah, I can't. There's nothing I can say at all to you. But that is, yes. And I would actually say, you know, what's your face? Calling Megatron, daring Megatron to take on Sentinel Prime, you know, because he's acting like a bitch might be the worst thing I've seen on a movie all year. So I got nothing to say against any of that.
It's lame, yeah.
All right, Mac, how about you?
All right, for my pick, I had to go with The Hangover Part 2.
All right. That was...
Snobby film critic types, when we complain about sequels, this is what we're complaining about. This is, you know, everything that is wrong about sequels is in this one movie. They just take everything from the first movie and just rehash it a second time. You know,
it made a lot of money, right?
It did, but it's all the same jokes. It's the same plot. It's the same everything. And it was just like, you know, for every time they did a joke, every time they did a big set piece, I was like, you know, oh, they're doing this again, you know? And it was just, you know, and if the filmmakers were here, they'd argue, oh, but it's different because they're in Bangkok instead of in Vegas. And there's a monkey instead of a baby. See, totally different. But,
and Ken Jeong, right? Does he continue to make himself unbearable?
I rather enjoyed the first movie.
We saw it, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it was an enjoyable experience, though it doesn't hold up well the second time around.
Yeah, well, part of the fun of the movie was not knowing what was going to happen.
Agreed.
Next.
Right.
And Ken Jeong was a big part of that because in the first movie, he comes out of nowhere.
Sure.
And takes you completely by surprise. But this time, for one thing, they say ahead of time that they're going to meet up with his character, so we know he's coming. And we know he's going to be showing up. And so then when he does, he shows up in much the same, shall we say, fashion that he did the first time. And again, it's just repeating the joke, you know, and it's not, you know, he worked in the first movie because it was a surprise. But in the second movie, it wasn't a surprise because we all knew what was going to happen ahead of time. And you could say that about a lot of what's in the movie. So,
all right.
Now, I've gone this long without ever having seen The Hangover. You think it's even worth watching
it?
Yeah,
I don't think so.
Okay.
For me, I'd say you give it a Netflix and...
Even though I probably know most of what happens in the movie at this point, just
see, that's the thing. It's
soaking
like
it
was funny because it was surprising, like Max said. Yeah. I mean, I can't look at any jokes that were particularly funny, you know? I mean, there weren't any, like, comic... It was just a lot of crazy stuff and just, you know, the questions and how it happened. And they did a good job of kind of revealing that, but...
Yeah, and
that's why the second time around maybe was not that funny.
Zach Galifianakis gets in some pretty good one-liners.
Yeah, that's true. All right, let's see. So, movie that pooped on people's soul would be... Let's see what we got here. For William... Sucker Punch. How does a movie featuring dancing girls, girls with guns, girls with swords, giant robots, dragons, and samurai go wrong? At least it was the most interesting bad movie I saw. That eluded me.
I actually enjoyed Sucker Punch. I think I'm one of the few people
really?
In the world. Right. Yeah, I did.
Let's see. Adam, the Smurfs. Yeah. That's probably actually all you need to go about it.
Yeah, a round of applause for him actually sitting through that.
Josh said, actually, interesting, Josh said, most people would probably say Star Wars, but since I didn't see the new version, I'll go with the Smurfs. So you must be talking about, like, Return of the Jedi, where Darth Vader yells no, right?
Oh okay, yeah.
So that's, I think that's where he's coming from. But he also gave a vote to the Smurfs, so. For me... Another pretty easy one, Conan the Barbarian. On the surface, you know, R-rated, you know, a guy who is promising, especially in Game of Thrones, you know, good source material, good mythology to work with, but just an absolute train wreck, garbage, like sci-fi straight to DVD quality stuff, you know. And again, we talked about Sons of Anarchy, and it's just amazing to me, like, Ron Perlman is great in that, but in everything else, he's just taking checks like, you know, I've got this third Scorpion King movie waiting in the living room for review starring Ron Perlman, you know? So, I mean, it's just...
Maybe it's brilliant.
I just have a hard time, so...
Yeah, he was pretty awful in Season of the Witch, the same thing. He was just awful.
Yeah, he just kind of gets cast in these, you know, garbage, like, fantasy types of movies. Yeah, that's right. And he was in Blood Rain or something. I don't know. I don't know. So, maybe in The Name of the King or whatever. So, just terrible, so, but he was a small part of it. I mean, it was just not, the action scenes were very special effects heavy, not kind of the, you know, Conan the Barbarian, swords, how hard is it, you know, there's not a lot of magic in Conan. He's swinging his swords, he's decapitating fools, it's bloody, gritty, it's, you know, earthy. You know, this one is just a lot of CGI crap and, just really disappointing.
Well, that's too bad. It seemed like they cast the Conan character pretty well. I was looking forward to seeing it.
That's right, Momoa, I mean, he tore it up in Game of Thrones. But he was just it's not his fault. His character was a stiff in this one. He just was boring. he gave boring stuff to do. I can't remember the bad guy. He just had a standard issue take over the world thing, and so many terrible things go wrong. So, and I'm glad that our Newfoundland counterparts or our Canadian counterparts aren't here because I think Steve Power liked that movie. So I don't understand. Don't understand. I mean, I would watch Conan the Destroyer over this movie. I would sit down and watch Conan the Wilt Chamberlain running around. You know.
Would you watch Red Sonja, though?
Oh, good question. I remember, that's a good question, Alice. I remember liking Red Sonja when I was younger, watching it, thinking it was cool. I saw it on TV recently. I was like, how could I watch this crap? Bridget Nielsen taking over this, you know, he's taking this little prince over her knee and spanking him at one point. What?
That little prince was pretty annoying, though.
He was. I'm glad she did it. I'm not saying I'm just... Oh, jeez. Terrible. Okay. What do you got for us, Mac? What's our next category?
Okay, next category. Well, it's time for us to all fess up.
Okay.
And bear our deepest, darkest secrets, talking about our favorite guilty pleasure of
guilty
the year.
Guilty pleasure. The filibuster, the buster awarded to our guilty pleasure of the year. All right, Eric.
Another tough category because since we no longer have cable, I don't... Just sit down and just turn it on and watch whatever's on, which I think is where a lot of guilty pleasures stem from. Mm-hmm. You know, there might be some reality show or something that I might include, but I don't have that. So I'm going to go with a TV show that I reviewed recently on DVD and expected nothing from, but actually enjoyed, and that is the Thundercats reboot.
All right.
The new Thundercats was actually pretty good. I was surprised at how into it I was.
Okay. So Thundercats t-shirt incoming?
Maybe.
And a Chitara poster on the wall, perhaps?
Full-size t-shirt.
Maybe. I don't know. I can't say yay or nay.
All right. Well, there's your Christmas gift guide for Eric Asher's Lakers.
There you go.
Oh, yeah. Now, did you watch it growing up? Were you?
Yeah. I mean, I was as much into Thundercats as anyone my age.
Okay.
So, I mean, I remember, obviously, G.I. Joe Transformers way more. But, yeah, I watched Thundercats. Yeah. I had the action figures and stuff.
There you go.
I've never gone back and rewatched the old show. I don't think I could, but.
Lion-O's spring-loaded sword-swinging motion he had, his action figure.
Oh, yeah.
Back whip. He'd swing his sword pretty awesome. And then Snarf, right? Wasn't there a guy named Snarf? Was a Snarf in that? He was like their little sidekick, right?
Yes. Right. Comic relief.
Yes. Did he make it in the remake?
Yep, Snarf's back.
Alright, good.
Pretty much all the major characters are back. They just sort of reset it in a slightly more grittier, kind of more mature.
So the Christopher Nolan approach, right?
I guess. Yeah, pretty.
What's who's the villain? Who's the main bad guy in that?
Oh, Mumm-Ra.
Mumm-Ra, yes, thank
Absolutely.
You.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Mumm-Ra. He's a pretty. He was kind of a. He was an a-hole for. He was an a-hole sure. villain.
I mean, he's kind of like Skeletor, except he had more meat on his bones.
Yeah, Skeletor was just a. He was like a prick for being a prick. You know, a prick sure, for absolutely. Prick's sake. You know, Mumm-Ra at least had a plan. I think. Yeah. You know?
When you're a skeleton already, you don't have much going for you.
That's true.
At least if you're a mummy, you know, an ancient evil mummy, you got some options.
You do have some options. All right, Alice, how about you?
I had to decide between two shows here, and one was Wife Swap. Don't hate me. Don't judge me. Please don't judge me. But the one I'm going to go with is Hoarders, because Netflix streams it, and I could sit and watch hours and hours of Hoarders. And the main reason is I think I'm a hypochondriac. I think I can get everything, including hoarding. So I watch the show in order to see the signs in case I do turn into hoarding. So that is my guilty pleasure.
Very good.
I hear there's a hoarding vaccine that they're coming out with.
Awesome. I can't.
Pfizer's working on it right now.
That's part of the appeal, though. People watch it and then they look around the house going, is that me?
Exactly.
Mac, how about your guilty pleasure?
All right. Well, you know, this was a movie I was so excited about. I was so pumped up to see it. And I saw it opening weekend and I really liked it. And I was just so excited about it, and I went back. I saw it four times when it was at the theater, at the IMAX, and I was so pumped. I liked the movie so much, and everyone else is just like, oh, it's just okay, or it sucked, or it was blah, and, you know, the reviews were, you know, middling at best, or just downright hateful and negative at worst, and I've never really come across anyone who's just like just as wowed by it as I was, which makes me the man alone. And fandom for this movie, and I'm talking about Thor.
Ah, yes.
Oh, Thor. I like Thor too. I'm with you.
Well, there you go.
Right, I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. I thought they took a character who's somewhat hard to relate to, and they kind of.
Yeah, speak for yourself, Mac.
They kind of recreated the character for a movie audience, and I thought it worked really well. So, just really got a kick out of it and just enjoyed the hell out of it.
Well, you're not alone, because Adam Arsenault also agrees Thor was his guilty pleasure. So maybe it's not even a guilty pleasure. Maybe you guys should just take pride in it. Someone who shouldn't take pride in it is Josh Rode, who says, I actually kind of enjoyed the William and Kate DVD I reviewed back in June.
That's sad.
Let's see. Tom brought us some non-Region 1 releases, so these might – we'll see if you heard of any of these here. Let's see. I doubt these will count since they're not legitimate releases, but the bootleg copies of foreign films. Until you've seen one-time Hollywood sex goddess and Oscar nominee Carol Baker emote, plus stripped naked in Italian exploitation films like Sweet Body of Deborah, So Sweet, So Perverse, and her Umberto Lenzi films, including the occasionally hilarious X-rated Orgasmo, also known as Paranoia, and A Quiet Place to Kill, also known as Paranoia. Well, you just haven't seen exploitation. So there you go. So I'm sure we can kind of relate to that. And William Lee, I'll quietly admit to liking The Smurfs.
No.
Another dip into the 80s barrel. This movie is better than I had any right to be. Not great cinema, but I thought it was a funny enough treatment of a concept that's pretty stupid in the first place.
Man, the Smurfs are sweeping the Busters this year.
Actually, they are
leading the vote count as we.
As for mine, the correct answer, yes, is probably Transformers, you know, 3. It probably is, but. Well, I'm gonna actually humiliate myself some more. There's a show on Nickelodeon that I laugh at, and I have no business laughing at. Big Time Rush. You familiar with this show? Anyone?
Nope.
It is like a comedy aimed at preteens about a boy band.
And, oh my goodness.
Yeah, I mean it's just total a cash grab by Nickelodeon. They want to get music spinoffs and all that, but it's funny for some reason, and I reviewed the first season, and I laughed. So, screw you all. If you
I'm glad at least it was a review, because I was going to say your daughter's not anywhere near old enough to be watching that. You can't even.
I can't pawn that off on her. Right? Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah. So I need a yeah. That unfortunately, you know, you can still pawn off the. Passing gas or so. Oh, she did it. But not,
I plan on doing that for quite some time.
All right, Mac, let's soldier on. We got to be flirting with the home stretch here, right?
Yep, we're at the top three, as they say in the legit award shows. we're doing this for the DVD Blu-ray review site, so let's talk about our favorite DVD and or Blu-ray of the year.
Favorite DVD and or Blu-ray of the year. Very good, Eric.
I reviewed this one back the beginning of the year, I think. I'm going to go with Almost Famous, the bootleg cut on Blu-ray. I know that there are bigger box sets that came out this year, but I was really impressed by this movie. I enjoyed it when it was in the theaters. This is, of course, Cameron Crowe's kind of semi-biographical story of when he was a teenage rock journalist and on tour with a band. And I really like this longer version. This is sort of, it's like an extra half an hour of footage. And it just kind of gives the movie more room to breathe, kind of fleshes out some of the characters. And I think if you have any love of rock and roll of the time period at all, it's really going to be a beautiful movie. And the Blu-ray is stunning. The transfer is great. Sounds great. The extras are all, I think, pretty much all standard definition, kind of ported over, which is a little disappointing. But I think as a package, it's really I don't want to say you could do worse. I shouldn't have said that. It's great. You should get it. It's my favorite Blu-ray release of the year.
Very nice. All right, Alice, your favorite.
My favorite. Well,
and it's not necessarily the best. So we're just the one you enjoy the most. Your favorite.
Oh well, good, because that's what I picked. And I'm Blu-rayless, so this is just a regular DVD. My favorite of the year was this little independent movie called Surrogate Valentine. It was, I don't know if anybody's ever heard of it, but it's a story of this musician and stars real life musician Go Nakamura, and it's sort of his life as a musician in San Francisco, and he gets hired by a friend to teach this know nothing actor. How to be a musician in a movie. And it was just something really, it's shot completely in black and white. Usually black and white movies have kind of a cold feel, but this one was warm and it was just fun. And he had this sort of laid back, attitude on the screen that was just interesting to watch. And just sort of watching this period in his life progress from the beginning to the end of this film. And then it ends, kind of on a cliffhanger. They want to do a trilogy, in this series. And it was just one of those movies I just sat and enjoyed and could watch over and over again. So that's me, babe.
Very nice. Very good. Very good. Mac.
All right. This is my pick. Is unbelievably expensive, but you get a lot of bang for your buck. It's the complete series release of Smallville.
Oh, that is a lot of bang for your buck. Yeah.
It's all 10 seasons in this one box, and it doesn't just take the previous boxes and just, tape them together. It's really nicely designed, really nicely packaged. Comes with this really cool book with tons of photos. And And for the most part, you also get, you know, all 10 years of Smallville in a single package. It's one of the best first episodes you'll ever see, one of the best last episodes you'll ever see. In the middle there, there's some creative hills and valleys. But,
sure.
But when the show worked, it worked really well. And man, that last few minutes of the final episode, that could have been the gently weep winner category. But yeah, it's great stuff all around, and a great show. And it was really good to see it go out on a high note.
All right. Let's see. So, and is that, so to speak, a high note? You know, is that kind of like, no pun intended there, Mac?
Sure.
High note, because Superman flies high in the air. You get it, where I'm coming from here?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, let's see. Okay. Favorite release here. Okay. Tom Becker, again, some interesting takes here. Fernando DeLeo, Crime Collection. I know influenced Tarantino doesn't carry the credit once did, but these are great films. If only Americans made gangster movies like this, rivaled only by Asian action, there's nothing like 70s and early 80s Italian action horror exploitation films. Nothing. Again, nothing. Each of the DeLeo films has a ridiculously cool action sequence. How can you beat the decimation of an entire mafia family with a grenade launcher while they're watching a porn film? Let's see. Bloodbaths on top of bloodbaths, ludicrous stunts, accommodating hookers. You really can't go wrong here. Let's see. Favorite DVD Blu-ray release for Josh was 13 Assassins, which is another excellent suggestion. And for me, I think kind of split here. Again, the correct answer is probably Warrior, but because I already used that, I'll go a different route. But Warrior, to me, was the best looking, best sounding, and actually used Blu-ray technology that you don't see anymore for some reason. People, they're not doing cool things with it. They actually had great extras that took advantage of the technology. But I'm gonna go with an underdog here, a French action film called Point Blank that I reviewed toward the end of the year, and at the very least, maybe it just gets other people to see it. It was just a great, you know, perfectly paced action film that it felt realistic. The guy is just kind of thrown into this impossible situation because of a matter of circumstance. He's like a nurse. His wife is kidnapped, and he's given these instructions on what to do by the kidnappers, and it just becomes this, you know, almost like a real time action, you know, action movie. But he doesn't morph into Van Damme or anything, you know. He just tries to survive, and it's extraordinarily tense and hugely entertaining, and just a great movie and a lot of fun. So, just a shout out to Point Blank, and an honorable mention to Ironclad, which is a very very violent but a very entertaining medieval action movie. Another real looker on Blu-ray too.
Yeah, I have Point Blank. It's tops on my queue because
I've heard
talk about it before, so I'm going to check that out.
Yeah, highly recommended. Highly recommended. So I won't say anything more because you need to go into that as blank as possible. Oh, but being another one. All right, Mac, what do we got next?
All right, down to the final two. Let's talk about our favorite TV programs of 2011.
All right. So, and it could be a season, right? A favorite season of a TV show, too. So,
yeah, we'll keep it loose again. Yeah,
absolutely. All right, Eric, what's yours?
All right. Well, anyone who's,
I might know what it is, but go
well,
on.
Anyone who has listened to the show knows that I'm a big fan of Community. So those people will be surprised to know that it's not what I'm picking.
Ah,
shock! This is the big twist. Actually, Community is way up there, and it's just sort of it could be on the same level. But I'm going to go a different direction, and I'm choosing Breaking Bad. As a show that I watched all four seasons this year, when it hit Netflix Instant, I just checked it out because I heard great things about it and just powered through the first three seasons. And it is just an amazing show. I liked it so much that I, as soon as I was done with season three, wasn't able to watch season four on TV. So I paid like 20 some odd dollars to get the video on demand from Amazon because I had to know what happened next. It's amazing to see a show that does everything it tries to do as well as this show does. But the acting is amazing. The writing is amazing. It's an hour long drama that does both character development with quiet character moments and crazy twists and turns. You know, at the same time, I don't know how they balance that out because usually you get one or the other. It's got, you know, great characters. There's really nothing that's superfluous. Things pay off way down the line, years, you know, seasons later. It's absolutely, it's become one of my favorite TV shows of all time. And, the fourth season, starts a little slow, but I think it's unlike maybe something like Sons of Anarchy, where season three kind of felt like they kind of lost their way for a while. Season four of Breaking Bad just feels like they're kind of building up to what becomes this kind of amazing, string of episodes down the line. And I can't wait for the fifth and final season, later this year. So.
Is the fifth season going to be the final one?
Yeah, they said five and they're done. So I can't recommend the show highly enough to everyone, I guess. Everyone who's willing to watch a show about, you know, crystal meth dealers. Also, credit to the show for being able to kind of be populated by characters who do terrible things and yet you completely sympathize with them.
Oh, totally. I love that show. It's amazing. It's an amazing show. And Sons of Anarchy was my favorite show to watch, but Breaking Bad has taken that place.
And it's such a I could go on about the show for a while, but it's also a beautiful show. I mean, they shoot it. It's one of the most cinematic shows in TV. I mean, it's just the way they film it is just it's just impeccable. And and they mix things up. There are camera moves and angles and tricks they do, especially in this fourth season, that are just really, would be impressive in a big budget movie, and are, you know, doubly impressive for a TV show. So, Breaking Bad.
Oh yeah.
Community is great too.
Of course.
Breaking Bad.
How about you, Alice?
I like Community. Yeah, my Buster is. I like Community too. That was my honorable mention. But I'm going to go with a show called Parenthood on NBC. I don't know if anybody's watched that show.
Yeah, I hear good things about that, actually.
It's a really good show, and I love it so much because there are people on there who just make me so angry, like in real life, that they just the way they develop these characters. I mean, there was a period in season two where I had to stop watching it because they were making me so mad. So it's one of those, it was one of those shows that the acting is so real and they're so good, and it reminds you of a real family that you just get involved in these characters' lives each and every week. And that's my favorite one. I love Breaking Bad, but for some reason this was, maybe as a parent, I chose Parenthood, so that's my favorite TV show.
Sure, and as a crystal meth dealer, I obviously chose Breaking Bad.
I thought so.
All right, Mac. How about you, Mac?
This was a tough one for me because there was actually a lot of TV that I enjoyed this year. I'm actually not going to go with my usual favorites, even though I enjoyed them. You know, Castle, Ben 10, great shows. But the one show that really jumped out at me, that really impressed me this year, was one that every new episode they came out with this year was great. It was just not a single week episode in the bunch. Every single one just wowed me week after week after week. And that's Futurama. And it was just, they just had a great run of episodes, and really clever, funny stuff. The jokes landed solid. The storylines they came up with were really imaginative and again, really clever. And a lot of character development, a lot of exploring some of the supporting characters' pasts. And so it's just a really great show all around, and just really presses those pleasure buttons.
And that's what we're after in the filibuster, pressing pleasure buttons. Josh picked up the slack for you, Mac. Castle. He threw out his favorite TV show was Castle.
Sweet.
So we got that. Castle got its buster. And Adam said Community. So Community gets his
great
buster as well. Yay. That's right. Tom, Dexter. Although the recent seasons can't hold a candle to John Lithgow in season four, and his runner-up was Judge Judy.
All right, I'll go for that.
There's just something refreshing about a smart, if emotionally unstable, wealthy, and educated person berating stupid people on television in the name of justice.
That could be a guilty pleasure, too.
That could be a guilty pleasure, too. I think that makes that makes.
See, now I'm imagining what would happen if Dexter met Judge Judy.
Oh, that
would
be good. If he had an answer for his crimes to her. That might be when the show is kind of jumping the shark, right? A special appearance by Judge Judy on Dexter. And for me, actually, speaking of Dexter, this was another Showtime show. It's a new show, Homeland, with Claire Danes, brought to you by a lot of the guys behind 24. So very, you know, a lot of similar themes to 24, but not an unbelievable cartoon. So, you know, so just very, very good stuff. Just finished watching the finale. They've set it up to go in a lot of interesting places, but a lot of big twists, some great acting, and, you know, just treats it very realistic. And I was shocked. The old white man Cabal does not make an appearance. I thought they'd be pulling the strings, but they're not. So, but anyway, excellent show. Homeland, excellent show. If it definitely scratches that 24 itch, though. And Claire Danes might, I don't know, she was very good in this, too. Okay, last one, right, Mac? This is it, right?
This is it. This is the big one.
Yes.
Favorite movie of the year.
Favorite movie of the year. All right, Eric.
All right, this is not a big movie, but this is one that I reviewed on Blu-ray, heard good things about, and really, really enjoyed. I'm going with James Gunn's Super, which is this is a movie starring Rainn Wilson as kind of an everyman whose wife, played by Liv Tyler, leaves him for a drug dealer, and he decides to become a superhero. And Ellen Page plays his sidekick, but it's a more kind of realistic take on what would happen if someone became a superhero, especially if they their weapon of choice was a pipe wrench they used to bludgeon criminals to death or near death for, you know, pretty minor infractions. But it's just really it's about that, but it's about more than that. I like that it's kind of a refreshing, kind of honest take on what comic book violence means, that it has a really nice redemptive arc. Kevin Bacon has a great performance as the drug dealer, kind of the villain. Michael Rooker is in it. Nathan Fillion is in it, playing this sort of TV character, this sort of Bible superhero guy. It's just a lot of really cool, weird stuff in it. It's funny. It's gross. It's moving. It's all these things, and it's just really, really impressed me. And so I'm giving it to Super. And I know that you can probably, people might be thinking, oh, Kick-Ass did that first, but I think Super does it better. So
I think so, Super. Too. Yeah, Kevin Bacon's getting quite a career as a bad guy.
Yeah, he's a good bad guy. You could probably go with a lot of action scene awards could go here. Villain deaths could go to this movie, too.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Just really, it's just really cool.
Yeah. All right, nice. All right, Alice, yours.
Mine is, since we're loosey-goosey, is also a little-known movie I reviewed earlier. It's called Beautiful Boy, and it stars Maria Bello and Michael Sheen, and they play this married couple on the verge of divorce who has a college-age son who commits suicide, but before he does that, he takes out 17 other people before he kills himself.
Nice.
And the interesting fact here is that they take it from the angle of the parents of the shooter instead of the parents of the victims. And just watching these two people whose marriage is already crumbling manage to somehow stay together through this kind of a tragedy, and they never get an answer. They never understand why their son did this. They realize they didn't know their son. And then the father, who's just crushed because the last time he had talked to his son on the phone, he rushed to get off the phone so that he could go watch his TV show. And, the last thing he does is brushes his boy off a night when he called, seemingly reaching out to his folks. It was just heart-wrenching. And Maria Bello is one of those actresses. She's one of my favorite, who kind of is underrated, and people don't really notice her very much, but she was amazing in this. You just believed through the whole thing that she was the mother of this boy. It was just one of those films that touched me quite a bit.
All right. Wow, sounds like a real pick-me-up, too, huh?
Yes, movie.
All right, Mac, yours. Your buster for favorite movie of the year.
All right. Favorite movie. Certainly there's never been another movie ever like this made, and there probably will never be one like it ever again. It's a real one of a kind. Kind of hard to see if it comes to your city, but I'll just say it. I'm going to go with The Clock.
Oh, The Clock.
Yeah. Oh, boy. I'm fascinated with this clock movie.
You are fascinated.
I can't get it out of my head.
You know, we're going for quality, not quantity. Yeah,
right. Again, this is the movie that's 24 hours long, made up entirely of footage from other movies, all featuring, images of clocks or watches or any kind of timepiece, and it's in real time. So, when it's 2 p.m. and you're sitting in the movie theater, you're watching images from famous movies of clocks that say 2 p.m. and then 2:01 p.m. switches to images from movies with 2:01 p.m. and so on for 24 hours.
It really does seem like the ultimate, don't you have anything better to do with your time?
Wow. Did you actually watch it for 24 hours?
I did not. The tickets for that were like $300.
Oh my goodness. Really?
I mean, do they serve you meals during this, you know?
I was wondering that, if they were going to feed you, or if there were going to be, like, a room off to the side with beds, or I don't know. This was at a museum where the clock was. It wasn't at a movie theater. It was at a museum, but they had set up a movie theater inside to show the clock, and people could just go inside and watch, like, a little bit of it and leave. So, you know, that was what most people are doing. But if you wanted the full 24-hour experience, you had to pay the super expensive tickets.
Have you actually seen this movie, Mac?
I just did the walk in and watch a little bit. And then
okay.
Leave, yeah.
Sorry enough. You got enough of the plot, right?
Yeah, exactly.
she didn't stay for the big twist at 11:59.
No. Oh, is that how it is?
Spoilers, but...
Yeah. Supposedly there's, like, you know, as you watch it, you see, you know, clips from movies you recognize, and like every famous actor you can imagine shows up for little brief cameos. I didn't quite get the sense of that, but no, it was really something.
All right. Favorite movie, William Lee's favorite movie. I like The Artist the best. It's hugely entertaining. Rather than telling audiences that silent films are important, it's just an example of a really good silent film. It's on many critics' best of lists, so I recommend seeing it before the inevitable backlash. That is a good point. Let's see. And Josh put a vote in. He liked the X-Men reboot. He said it was one of the few he saw in the theater. So he gave a thumbs up to the X-Men. Mine was kind of a runaway. It was, I've mentioned it before, but 13 Assassins.
Yeah, yes. Great movie.
Just
great movie.
Unbelievable. I mean, just... an hour, just a solid, it's amazing, like a solid, you know, it's kind of interesting comparing it to Transformers, you know. You know, that, like Transformers, half of the movie is solid action, but unlike Transformers, the other movie, the other half is like a fantastic build-up.
Exactly. Action, yeah.
With a truly detestable villain, and then, you know, some guys you get to know their stories, and then when, you know, it all hits the fan, it's just, you're just roped into it, and it's just, I mean, it really is amazing. So, you know, 13 Assassins was by far my favorite movie of the year. And I believe that's it, Mac. Does that wrap up our ceremony?
Looks like it. Yeah.
Wow, another Busters. Another percent. That's a 1,000th episode. So,
that's right.
Wow.
So, thanks for everybody. Alice, thanks so much for joining us.
I had a blast. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, we'll get you on again.
I'd love to do it again. Thank you. Absolutely.
Rumor has it you have a shotgun and some wild livestock, so we do not want to anger you.
Exactly.
So we will get you back with us very soon. But Mac, awesome. Eric, thank you. And then I guess we'll return to our regularly scheduled filibuster next week. So Friday filibuster, DVDverdict.com is our email. If you agree with our busters, I guess we could – I don't know if we want to make any effort to post them anywhere. But yeah, just – listen to this podcast again if you really want to know. So, Mac, any parting thought?
I just missed your heart.